Welcome to another episode of the Examine Life podcast, a podcast where we take some of life's thorniest questions and deconstruct them in a way that is pragmatic and philosophical so that you can lead a more productive, examined, and joyful life. My name is K.E. Today, I'm joined by my friend, Michael Perry. What's going on, man?
How are you?
It is awesome to have you here. And our question today, we'll do introductions, but our question today is, does money ruin kids? And there's a lot to unpack there. So I'm excited to have you here. Thanks again, man.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here. I'm always fun to talk to a fellow surfer and a fellow life philosopher. So it's an honor.
Oh man. So tell us, fellow surfer. You shared earlier that you aren't getting much swell this week. But you meet someone in the lineup, or you're grabbing tacos after a session, and they don't know you, and you're like, "Hi, I'm Michael." How do you introduce yourself?
Ooh, I mean, broadly speaking, I almost always introduce myself as Michael to start. My name is kind of critically important, but I certainly view myself as a father of two sons. That almost always comes up in conversation, especially if I'm surfing my local break and I see another dad in the water.
Yeah.
And I spend most of my time asking how he got or she got their kids in the water, because I think that surfing with my children someday will be one of my greatest life moments. And typically after that, it's always followed by, my passion for what I have given my life to, my servitude to not just raising my children, but building software that hopefully empowers people to raise their children.
Amazing. And I might interject here and call you a bit of a serial entrepreneur. You're software engineer. Is that?
No, I am an engineer, but all the engineers I work with, I don't think would ever tell you I'm an engineer. I'm a shitty engineer. I would say a product mind for sure. And definitely on like the branding and just business development side has been my strength over the last 20 years building companies.
Got it. And tell us about your current
entrepreneurial
company.
Journey.
Tell us about your entrepreneurial journey.
How life has been.
It's an important part of your story.
It is an important part. Everyone's story is important, but I think that in the case of where I'm at today in life, it's so weird that, not to overly quote famous entrepreneurs, but I definitely am right now in a season of life where everything feels like it's starting to add up based on everything that's kind of happened. I grew up in a really humble environment with a very passionate, hardworking family, and felt immensely thankful early on in my life. I think that one of the things I feel most fortunate about is that I think my signal for gratitude has always been really high. And just felt super lucky to have loving parents, and that was the only thing that mattered, was that we were together as a family. I went and worked for my uncle. My parents unfortunately sent me off to, or fortunately sent me off to work at the number gets debated, but somewhere between 7 and 8.
Okay.
And I worked for my uncle for a long time. He ran a video store and then ultimately ran a jewelry business in the little island I'm from, of Alameda, California. And I worked for him until I went and worked for my father selling cars. My father ran a car dealership, a family dealership that he worked at, that he ran. And ultimately, I found that in that journey, I really, really deeply fell in love with small business owners. I felt empathetic, I think is the right, being a small business owner sucks. It's really hard. It's a really hard life. It's tons of time away from your family. You're gambling with your family's money on yourself. And I watched many people around me, family members, shut businesses down. And so as I fell in love with technology, I started my first company in 2006. I made this shift when I wanted to be serious about being an entrepreneur, that I wanted to have a life of servitude for small business owners. And I wanted to build technology that I thought was going to give them the best fighting chance to survive, because it was the people I loved that were struggling to make it. And was really fortunate that built a company. That company taught me a tremendous amount. I ended up shutting that one down, starting a third time, built that company up. That company eventually became a venture-backed business. And then that company eventually sold to Shopify in 2016. And then I gave the 4.5 best years I possibly could to Shopify to continue to further my personal mission of helping small business owners. But like yourself, 30, I was having, I think, a bit of a, I'd like to believe quarter life and not midlife, but somewhat crisis.
You're talking our language here, Michael. Yeah,
somewhat crisis. You know, I went from not being able to buy a cup of coffee to like being able to buy a coffee shop overnight and just feeling so fucking hollow. You know, it's like this weird thing. You know that saying, like, you should never meet your superheroes?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's really shitty when you meet the version of yourself that you thought mattered. And I got to meet that guy. And there was a huge amount of disappointment in that version of myself. And once I became a father, like, I don't mean to sound cheesy to the people who are listening, but it is single-handedly the biggest life event that I've ever had. I can only imagine that outside of having children, the largest life event to some extent is death in itself, because you get to find out the ultimate mystery of life. But I just remember holding my son and just feeling so deeply purposeful about my role on earth, and the everything that I thought really mattered, or that I was upsold that mattered, just kind of didn't matter anymore. And I left my post at Shopify shortly after he was born, to start a company that I could be a true servant, a true mission-oriented human, to shaping a company and value system that absurdly aligned with each other, and that I could be, I can work for parents, I can focus on parenting, and I could build groundbreaking technology that empowered us to do our life's work. And I don't think I would have been able to make any of those sacrifices or decisions if, like, I screw up with nothing, but I knew family mattered, I got to taste the finer things of life and found out that didn't really matter, and had the challenges of raising a family and wanted to make my life commitment shift to focus on that.
Beautiful, man. Well, that's an amazing and inspiring story. And there's so many, I'm like making notes, like where am I going to pick at? But before we pick at, we're going to introduce the question. Every episode is a question. So today's question is, does money ruin kids? And we're going to talk about all of these influences, purpose, factors, variables that come into play here, and this beautiful mission of yours. Before we jump into the conversation, if you are a driven, successful entrepreneur, Wall Street professional, lawyer that is also one feeling this hollow sense of self that comes with success, that might come with financial gain, and you're looking to unpack that with a group of like-minded folks, check out radreads.co/coaching. Those are our group coaching programs. So, all right. So I'm going to pick out a few points here because I know more of your backstory. When you were growing up, how would you describe your family's financial situation?
Well, you know, my mother had me at 22. She was a waitress, and my father was selling cars. So obviously we didn't have a lot of money. We grew up in a very, you know, very challenging situation, financially speaking. But, you know, I think the problem is, in some weird way, like, my parents did this. I mean, we were definitely the family that my parents worked their fucking ass off. And my mom would wait tables and come home at night. And I remember I can still hear the coins hitting my piggy bank as my mom emptied out her apron into my piggy bank. And my grandmother, who had nothing, she died with nothing. She died with a Bible, basically. She would open up her cabinets and let my parents grocery shop out of them. And so, like, I think the most important thing with all these things was, like, not that we had nothing, because I think there's such this large emphasis on, like, what did you financially start with? I think I had a ridiculous competitive advantage in life. Like, the shit money can never buy. And financially speaking, we had nothing, but based on life, we had everything.
Was your family stressed about money? Like, did you feel the stress?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's never something you like to admit or talk about, but
Yeah. Do you remember your first memory of money, of like the power of money?
I remember, the first feeling of the power of money?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that for sure, because that's when I knew I wanted to make money.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. When I was 10, I grew up in this little housing community out kind of like towards the Oakland airport. And my neighborhood best friend growing up, we were 10. I'd been working for 2 years, working for my uncle at like $3 an hour. And I was like, this is bullshit. And we took some skateboards and we hammered them together using his stepdad's tools. We built a cart out of our skateboards and we took an old like Home Depot painter bucket and my mom's dish soap and like some old fucking towels. And we literally went door to door washing cars. And we would go knock on people's doors and say, hey, can we wash your car for $10? All you have to do is provide the water. You know, I don't know if people actually wanted their car washed or felt like we're kids.
Support the kids.
Yeah, but I think like that summer I was making like $250, $300 a week in cash.
Wow.
At 10.
You're 10?
Yeah, I was 10. And I remember walking around, like riding my BMX bike with like hundreds of dollars in my pocket, just thinking like I was the fucking man. And my parents were so proud, obviously. We got in the car. It was like a big deal. We drove all the way into San Francisco. We went to the Toys R Us out in old Japantown. And I bought a green remote control car. And none of my friends had electric remote control cars. And no one bought it for me. I bought it for myself on my own hard-earned money. And I pretty much have been working since that moment full-time.
That's...
I remember being like, I don't want to be poor anymore. Like, I don't want, I want to be able to buy them the fuck I want and it shouldn't matter. And I'm just going to destroy anything in my way to get whatever I want. And basically my parents knew in that moment, I think we've never overly talked about it, but I think they knew in that moment, like school was probably not going to be for me. And I was probably going to take some unorthodox path and that I was going to be successful. And my family at that point, it was very weird. My family would be so absurdly supportive for a kid that was so young. About believing in himself. And I just feel so blessed because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Did your parents, they were obviously were supportive of your entrepreneurial journey from that point. Did you start to contribute financially to your parents at that point? Or was it
not
more like buying?
No, later in life, but not at 10. I mean,
when do you remember helping your parents for the first time financially?
I was helping my family financially in high school and early 20s, helping my sister and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's listening to you talk. I grew up lower middle class. So maybe similar ish. We had financial insecurity, but not like really bad, but I had a very similar moment. I would go to my parents and like, I want Jordans. I want polo shirts.
Yeah.
I want the new Nintendo game. And it just always be, no, 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 we can't afford it. We can't afford it. We can't afford it. And for me, it was a little bit older. I was probably 15 or 16. And I'm a bit older than you, I think. I'm 44.
Yeah.
And I taught myself HTML.
Oh, that's cool.
And I basically was going to local businesses telling them in 95, you need a web page.
That's
crazy. I'll make web pages for you. And I was making... this is in 1995, $15 an hour cash.
You're killing.
Working 20 hours a week, right?
It was
crazy. And from that day too, I was like, no one's ever going to tell me what I cannot buy. I will always control my financial future and my family's financial future. And I got a taste of it. And I think similar, I mean, this is one of the reasons
we get
along.
The taste is a drug, right? And by the way, in 95, I was washing cars, so we were coming up together at the same time, just on different coasts.
Different.
You know,
you ended up in software, and I didn't.
Well, the interesting thing, and I think maybe this is why I'm so filled with gratitude, and to them, you know, I think to some extent, there's some rich dad, poor dad mentality stuff going on here, but like, I was wearing the Jordans. Dad was going to work with holes in his shoes. My mom, I remember every single Saturday going with my mom to either sell or buy used clothes for a long time. And they were doing whatever the fuck they could to give me the best chance.
Yeah.
Whatever they could do. And my gratitude for my life is so absurdly high. And I just remember in that same time period, my dad was selling like Bentleys and Range Rovers and Lamborghinis and Jaguars and selling exotic cars. And he would always take me to, whenever he had to deliver a car, he'd always take me to his customers' homes. And the whole car ride home without fail, he would give me this whole almost like rally cry. Like he'd be like, you're going to have all this someday. You're going to make it someday. You're going to have anything you want someday. Like you are capable of anything you want to do. And I think that like one of the, like, you know, your question is, does money ruin people? I guess we'll get to that one second. I think like the most valuable thing on earth for a parent to a child is very little to do with money, very little to do with what you can buy them, 100% to do with what you can get them. And I was 10 living in a shitty situation. And my dad was telling me at 10, you're going to be a millionaire someday. Don't fall into the traps. Don't follow your friends. Don't be confused. You're going to be better than everyone someday.
Yeah. Was it this like,
it unlocked my potential.
Was it this like, I unconditionally believe in you, or was it like a positive psychology kind of like?
I don't actually know. I mean,
yeah.
I think interviewing parents of entrepreneurs would be a fascinating podcast.
Yeah. That's...
I think my parents still to this day show me the most ridiculous amount of emotional support.
Wow.
And I still call my parents. I'm like, I don't know if I'm capable of pulling this shit off.
Wow.
And my parents are like, yes, you can.
Yeah.
I remember when I had made it and I was in my home and in my pool with my mom, and she's like, you're not done. You're not done. Like you have more in you. You can don't quit on yourself.
Yeah.
And they're the first people I called when I said, hey, I think I should leave Shopify. Everyone around me was like, you're insane. My parents were like, that you absolutely 100% should bet on yourself.
Wow.
Like,
and so
that's the gift.
Yeah. And it's interesting to hear you say that, because if we just like look at parallel paths and in our own lives, my parents were more, so my dad had this saying. And he said, we may not be the smartest, but we're the hardest working.
My parents say that to me too.
And it's weird because that saying definitely made me who I am. And at the same time, when I went to college, and so I went to Yale, and there were like lots of really fucking smart kids there. And their parents had been telling them their whole lives, like, you are the smartest person. You can do anything. Like my parents didn't say you can be anything you want. They were like, you're going to grind and then you'll make it, right? Yeah. Like, you know, and I think of that aphorism, because in one way it was kind of, there's like humility baked into it. It's like, don't get too high on yourself.
Yeah.
But there's also like low self-esteem.
Totally.
You know, it's like a very fine line between low self-esteem and humility. And that thing, that phrase, and so for me, work has always, we were talking before, has always been the superpower. I will outwork anyone. Like one day I decided I wanted to not have skinny calves, and I did like 1,000 calf raises every day for 6 months.
Yeah.
I still have skinny calves. But like, that's the thing, is like, if there's something that I could put work towards, like I'm going to, like, maybe not you, you know, good thing we're not having a work.
Yeah,
off.
Workout competition. We'd probably die of heart attacks. You know, my parents were, by the way, like for whatever it's worth, my parents were super similar. Even now, my mom's like, Perry's are workers. We work hard.
Mm-hmm.
And their number one thing is teach your boys how to work. And I just deeply believe, and my dad used to say the same thing. My dad's whole thing was like, you know, he made a machine. He knows he made a machine. And his whole thing was like, no one is ever going to outwork our family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Like you have to, and the same thing, like you have to grind.
Yeah.
It will not be easy. It will not be hard. Like they never sugarcoated shit. It was I'd be like 12 or 13 or 14. My dad's like, toughen the fuck up. This shit's hard.
Yeah.
Like, hey, no one giving you shit. You better get out there and work and grind. And, you know, like, even now, like, when I was on food stamps in my 20s building my company, my parents like, did you think it was going to be easy? Like, you don't have an option. There's no quitting in our family. Like, be on food stamps then. Like, who do you care? Like, figure it out.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, most parents would never encourage their kid to gamble on themselves in that way.
Yeah.
Like they just wouldn't, right? They'd be like, hey, you know, this isn't working out. You're on food stamps. Like maybe you need to like rethink this. I was on food stamps getting evicted, and my parents, A, wouldn't help me, and B, they're like, you're not allowed to quit.
Wow.
go. Like, you need to finish this. You need to finish your mission.
Yeah.
And I just like, it's just a wild thing when I look back now as a parent where I'm like, would I be able to do it?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. So this pivots us to our question. We're going to come around about here. So you are humble about it in your description, but you built this company, sold it to Shopify, and life-changing money.
Yes.
Like you said, coffee, not buy coffee, buy coffee shop, probably buy multiple coffee shops.
Buy multiple blocks, yeah.
Yeah. And you live in Santa Barbara now?
Yes.
Santa Barbara. So kind of Manhattan Beach-like, just kind of wealthy enclave of California, you know, where the Katy Perrys and the Ellens and the Oprahs and all, like, those are your neighbors. I know some people who live there. And so let's just jump right in. It's like, you and I are both raising our kids in probably top 20 zip codes in all of America, right?
Correct. Yes.
With where everything, I mean, I just was at my kid's school. They had, you know, a PTA sponsored Bollywood dance-a-thon,
right.
And like literally all the parents were there in the middle of like fucking Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Like, aren't y'all supposed to be working? Like, why can't I have your job?
It's like a 20-minute Bollywood performance. So, like, that is the kind of world, you know, that we're growing up with. And so I, you know, the circumstances that you and I had growing up were, you know, you said your food stamps in your 20s. And for me, it's like my parents would not buy me anything. It's like they are not in that environment.
No.
How do you reconcile that? Because you actually, and I'll be direct about it. You actually over-index more, at least from what I hear, on that. Like, I really want to pass that down to my kids, that work ethic.
Yes.
And I'm kind of like, that work ethic is like, to me, it's like a source of high blood pressure.
Yes.
I'm like not very kind to myself.
Yeah.
I have a lot of like mental health, like quiet. Yeah. I had an alcohol problem for a while.
Yeah.
It's like that hard work ethic, I see the dark side of it. And I'm sure you've seen it. You might have experienced it.
Living it. Yep.
And so I wonder, I'm like, I want to cherry pick. I want to like, you, daughter, take good parts of work ethic, take all that other stuff, like carve it off to the side. And oh, by the way, we live in one of the like ritziest suburbs in California, in Southern California.
Yep.
Do you feel it? Do you feel that tension with your family?
I think it's always important to some extent, you know, to separate. Do we live in the best place? I think obviously to your point, we live in expensive zip codes, but for some families, this wouldn't work. Even if you had the money, it may not be the best place. Right. I think we've hopefully picked locations that make the best sense for our families, and everyone else is hopefully doing the same thing. You know, I am somebody who struggles deeply with self-hatred. Nothing has ever been good enough. Probably to some extent, nothing ever will be good enough. I have worked with therapists, executive coaches. I work out. I look in the mirror, hate my body, hate what I've accomplished, hate what I've done. Like, it's a really sad fucking situation, because I've cried to my wife that, like, I have everything I've ever wanted. I should feel absurdly successful. And yet the reality of it is I feel like I have nothing. I still don't feel proud. In some weird way, it's like there's still something that's like not right. I think that speaks a lot to the hollow feeling that I had.
Yeah.
I don't know if work ethic contributes to that. I don't know if like being a hard worker has created, and maybe it has, I just don't know. I don't know if like that is what's created like the demons I battle with. And I also like have a very sick situation where like I oddly love it too.
You love the conflict of it, the internal conflict of it?
Yeah, because like I don't know if I would have accomplished, I'll never know if I would have accomplished what I accomplished without the expectations and hatreds I have out of myself.
Wow.
So, you know, would I wish that on anyone? Absolutely fucking not. I would never, ever, ever wish for someone to wake up and struggle with themselves. That is not a great situation. And like, I hope someday I'm freed of this to be super just like brutally truthful.
Yeah.
I think in the case of my children, I think the benefit of growing up with no backstop is you have to figure out who you are.
No
one wants to talk about that. Like, there's a big gift, huge fucking gift for someone to be like, I can't save you.
Yeah.
You gotta go beyond food stamps. You gotta go grind on Wall Street. You gotta go build the hours, or you don't, but your life will change. Right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's really easy for any one person who has a complex path to, you know, wish the portions of it were non-existent. But the reality of it is there's nothing about my life I would change. Mm-hmm. And I needed all those shit, all fucking terrible moments of life and the demons and the everything. I need everything to happen to get me to exactly this conversation right now.
Yeah.
When I leave this conversation, I'm getting in my car, I'm driving to my dream house, I'm seeing my dream wife and being with my dream kids, and I have good health, and I live in a beautiful place, and my parents are good, and my sister is good, and my family's good, and I wouldn't change a fucking thing about my life.
Yeah.
So, like, I am aware that changing my past strips me of the joy of my present.
Wow.
My children, I am, the greatest thing my parents did for me was believe in me.
Yeah.
My children have to decide what kind of life they want. And the only way I can help them find that life is to remove that backstop.
Yeah.
So, like, if they don't want to work hard, okay. But
yeah,
easy path, hard life.
But if not,
you want to be able to be a member at the Montecito Club? Shit ain't cheap. You want to drive whatever car you want, vacation wherever you want, live wherever you want? I had to give up for that shit?
That's
I had to give up a fucking decade of, I had to give up 20 years of my life.
Yeah.
20 years of my fucking life. Think about that. I'm 37. Yeah. 20 straight years of no days off.
Yeah.
So for some people, probably some who are listening, they went to some kick-ass college, got to go to Saturday football games, got to go to parties. Then they graduate from college, got to go work a cool job, got to be in New York, got to have drinks, got to take trips with their friends, got to experience life as a 27-year-old, 28-year-old, 29-year-old. I was building fucking companies for 18 hours a day for 10 years straight. No college, no games, no parties, no trips, no nightclubs, no fucking brunch with Bloody Marys. I experienced zero of that.
Yeah.
So, like, if my kids want this life, they're going to have their own version of sacrificing. And if they don't want to grind, I'm not forcing them to. But then they have to live with the consequences of their life.
Yeah.
And the best thing I can do is share with them the same way you will share with your children. There's a cost.
Yeah.
And in my case, the cost was no 20s and some serious mental health shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I get rid of that, no.
Yeah. Wow. First, Michael, thank you for sharing the inner struggle, because I think it's very relatable. What you said, like, I don't like to look, you know, I've got a six pack at 44 and I don't like to look at myself in the mirror because I know I've got a bald spot and that's all I see.
That's right.
That's all I see.
And you're, it's obsessive.
It doesn't matter, right?
Nope.
So I can relate to some of the things that you've said. And I think it really, look, people look at you, people are going to look you up on LinkedIn or whatever. They're going to see your career trajectory. They'll be like, from the outside, you have everything.
Yes.
That someone wants. You know, you have status, you have the house, you have everything, health. And at the same time, it's such an unfair representation, you know, to not know the other side of it. And I thank you, because a lot of people I know, because behind closed doors, when the mics are off, they share exactly what you shared with me. People with 7, 8, 9 figures of net worth, but they would never say it publicly because it would crack the veneer of the story that they're trying to paint for others. So I just want to thank you.
I got nothing to hide. Like, it's been a journey.
Yeah.
But like, I would be naive or a liar or unauthentic to say like, this shit took a fucking, this, yeah. Listen, you nailed it. I would bet anything if I laid out and shared, you know, the material bullshit of my life. Yeah. People want what I have. I'm going to go on a limb and say less than 1% of people would ever, if I told you this is what you have to do to get these things, 99% of people would say that's not for me.
Well, yeah. And not only that, this is what you have to do. But then on top of that, this is what goes on between these 2 years.
That is a hard one to even explain.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll tell you, I was doing, brief aside, I was doing this IFS therapy, which is internal family systems. And you basically like, they ask you like, do you feel a pain in your body? And like, yes, I feel a tightness in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, well, what is that? Talk to that tightness. What does it say? And so what the tightness was saying is, I'm tired. I'm so tired. And this is the, I was like, this is that part of me that just like, go, like nonstop. I'm 40, almost 45 years old. And then the therapist asks, what is that part, that pain in your chest? What does it need right now? And you know what I said? What it said? It said, it just needs someone to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I like burst into tears.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like this thing that I'm carrying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and look, similar, like, you know, like I surf every day, I'm, you know, I'm ripped, I'm this, I'm that. But I'm like, there's this thing in me that's like, it just for 30, like since we were grinding, right? Since 10, 15, for 30 years, it's been working its ass off and it just wanted someone to say thank you. Right. Yeah. And it's not that like my wife does, it's not even my wife saying thank you or my kids saying thank you. It is like this fundamental, like interior self gratitude that I just refuse to give myself, which it's I think self-love. Is probably aversion. Yeah, it's self-love. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
I refuse to give myself self-love, probably in that wiring, in that frame that you've described it, because I'm like scared of what my life looks like without that self-hatred.
Yeah, it's fucked up. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like every time I've tried to like let it go, I find myself unmotivated to go further.
Yeah.
And every time I like, it's a sick, sick relationship.
Yeah, man.
But you know, like at the same time, like, and I really do believe this, like, I really don't know if I would change anything about my life. If anything, like, yeah. I wish time would just stop. If somebody right now could wave a magic wand and say, hey, man, you can be 38 forever. You can be healthy. Your kids could be 5 and 2 forever. I would be like, I'll cash those chips in.
Yeah.
I'll stay right here, you know? And I think that anytime you can be super transparent and honest and find the gratitude for whatever the universe has given you. And you say like, you know what? I'm good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like then you say like, well, if I'm good, then I have to be accepting and okay too.
Yeah.
You know? And like, that's just where I'm at. Like, yeah, this shit's been hard. Yeah. You know, I probably could have treated myself differently but you know what, maybe all that bullshit got me here, and like maybe the universe gave me exactly what I need.
What about the phrase like, well, I'm gonna butcher it, you know, like what got you here won't get you there, right? You're in another season of life, right? Like post exit young father, you'll hit another season when your kids get older, or when you're coming up to nest, or probably seasons we can't even imagine sitting here, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever wonder that like the superpower that got you to where you are today, like maybe it needs, the volume needs to be turned down, or maybe it needs to like retire, like step backstage, like one step back. Do you see it that way?
Well, yeah, because there's lots of versions of yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think the question is, when you say, you know, the version that you got you here won't get you there, it's like, where's there? You know, so I think if you have the clarity of where you're trying to go, then you can start building the version of yourself you're trying to be right now. And this may sound crazy to your listeners, is like, you know, right now I'm just trying to be a good man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like I'd like to be, I don't think very many people are going to say at the end of my life, damn, he was a good entrepreneur. I hope not. I hope not. I hope that they're not like, oh, he was a self-made guy. No, that's not what I want. That's
he
not
sold
what
three
I,
companies.
Yeah, like, God, could you fucking imagine if at the end of your life, someone got up there and said,
yeah,
he was a phenomenal entrepreneur.
Yeah.
The disappointment would be, you failed.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So, like, right now, what I'm trying to say is, like, I think I've proven I'm all right at entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
You know, like, that. This is just kind of in my DNA. Like, I now I fail this company. I don't think I will, but that's part of it. But, you know, I'd like to prove that I'm an okay man on earth, too. And I'm a good husband, and I'm a good father, and, you know, and I'm really trying to be present. Like, I'm working on being here, like, right now. That's what I'm not working on, like, how do I make it anymore? I'm working on, like, how am I here? How am I present? How am I enjoying it? How can I partake in life without thinking 10 years out?
Yep. Do you think that the, if you think of, and, you know, you use, using your language, I would use something not as harsh, like inner critic, but like self-hatred.
Yes.
Do you think that it's hard to be present when your inner critic is going off the rails? Dude, and so in one regards, like, they're kind of related, like, you know, in the, like, you know, what got you here won't get you there. It's like the inner critic maybe worked really well when you had a deadline to meet for fundraising or KPIs. But when your son is like, daddy, daddy, can we do this? And the inner critic's firing, it may not serve you as well in that current season, right? And so have you thought about, like, how do you approach that internal, like, or let me ask it different. Do you believe that some kind of, and we all need some form of internal healing, right?
Yeah.
Do you believe that to become the father that you want to be, the fullest expression of it, that it comes part and parcel with some kind of healing or path towards more self-love?
I mean, my kids are teaching me so much about myself. You have to have me back. I mean, I'm only 5 years into fatherhood. You have to have me back. I think the truthful answer is that I'm officially in a season of life. This is the dead truth. I am officially in a place of life where in real time, my behaviors, I know I'm going to have regret about. Hmm. And like the other day, this is an example. The other day, my son, I was like super stressed, like rushing around the house. And my son was like, daddy, can you play Transformers with me? And I said, son, I'm sorry. Like, daddy has to get to work. I will play Transformers with you when I get home. And I got in my car and I went to work. And you know what? Like, there is not a single fucking person I talked to that day that's more important than my son. I don't even have to fucking work.
Yeah.
So like, why? Like, this is where the self-hatred is in full effect. I have more self-hatred about my decision on that morning for a month now. And I've talked to my wife about it probably 10 times. And I beat myself up. And my son doesn't remember, right?
Yeah.
But I am so fucking aware that that was such a bad decision. I have so much hate, like anger at myself that for some reason, and I don't know why, in that moment, going and taking a Zoom call with some person I can't even name right now was more important than me getting on my hands and knees than playing with my four-year-old son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? My regret in life, and I hope that your listeners feel this way too, and I hope that they have a reality check if they don't. My regrets in life will be absolutely at 0% around business decisions, and they will be at 100% around family decisions.
Yeah.
I will not be on my deathbed thinking, why did I not sell my company? Why did I not build a bigger company? Why did I, like, there's no fucking way that's happening.
Yeah.
I will 100%, and I know it right now, and I'm working hard on it right now. I will 100% be praying and wishing and begging that God gave me more time with my kids.
Yeah.
And you know what? If I could drain my fucking bank account right now and guarantee me time with my kids, to extend the clock, I would liquidate everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Or if someone could at least promise me for whatever amount of money that my kids were going to be okay, I would liquidate everything.
Yeah.
Right. So like the self-hatred, sorry, I'm going a little off the rails right now. I'm like, sorry. Like the self-hatred now has changed to, well, it's expanded, but like really, I just don't want to, I know I'll have wish I did more for my kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, I commend you for that level of self-awareness, because so many of us just go through the motions and don't even realize the transformers moment, right? It's just a drop in the bucket. And I would point out, and I'm not here to pile on to the self-hate, because, you know, there's a lot of self-hate on this call right now. But the thing is, like, you know, it's like you would buy back, you would liquidate your bank account to buy back more time. And then at the same time, the transformer, you actually had all the time in the world.
All of it right now.
For that moment, right?
I know.
And you said it in passing, but like you never have to work again. So it wasn't financially motivated. Let me offer this up.
I don't even take a paycheck. So there's no financial motivation. I work completely for free at my own company.
So let me tell you, I have the transform. I mean, I have daughters, so it's probably more like a, you know, Hello Kitty moment.
But the same stories, I'm sure.
The way I have learned to understand it about myself is that work ethic piece of me, it's like it defines me. It's actually how I give myself self-love. Is like, I can do this thing, and this thing will get recognized, like, because people will like this podcast episode, and I could do, and I'll get these like little bursts of validation, like, "Kay, you're a good person." "Kay, you're smart." "Kay, I see you."
It's a drug.
And I will get, and that is actually, I think, like a proxy for love, like self-love. And it's like, oh, like that feels, it's like alcohol. Like it feels so good. Like just more, 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 more. And so when I'm in my Hello Kitty moment, I'm like, it's actually the fucking brutal irony of it is like the person that wants to give me the most fucking love is sitting right there asking to give it to me in that moment. And I'm like, no, because of some prior patterning, I need to get in front of a laptop and then receive it from like Twitter anonymous likes, because that is it's it feels so safe to me. Right. And actually being loved by my kid in front of me playing with Hello Kitty, it doesn't feel safe.
Yeah.
Something about it doesn't feel safe. And you know, I don't have to not, but I'm basically financially independent as well. So like, I don't need to do anything.
To rush to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely don't need to rush to it. And usually for me, it's like a stupid thing. It's not even like sometimes it's like just reading some article about AI in the Wall Street Journal. I'm like, hold on. Like, I was just like scrolling. I'm like, what will AI do to lawyers? Like, you know, I'm like halfway through that article. So I feel you. I feel you a lot just on like, that, man.
You know, like one thing, I'm not to change the subject, but you said something and it was a trigger for me, because like when I was building my last company, I got turned down 50 consecutive times to raise capital. And my mom said to me one time, she was like, "Miguel, like, you got to look for internal validation, not external validation." And I just, ever since that moment, by the way, is the wisest thing my mom has ever said to me. And I was like, fuck. Like, she's right.
Yeah.
You know, if you're seeking that external hit and you don't have the internal belief, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. It's a leaky bucket, man.
It's a leaky bucket, because it's just chasing shit, chasing people's opinions.
You're pouring water into the bucket.
That's it. It's all coming out.
It's all coming out.
I just think that, you know, I totally get what you're saying, because again, you know, when you get turned out by 50 investors or you grow up with nothing, like I just remember again, like I won all those awards. I had the Forbes 30 under 30. I won Inc's most influencer, largest influencer on the boss space. I won Business Insider top 30 executive in the world. I've seen the top of the mountain. I've lived at the bottom of the fucking valley. I have never felt shittier in all my life than be a rich guy with a bunch of awards. I will never forget sitting in Montreal in a hotel room, finding out that my wife and I were likely never going to have a baby, and being like, I have all this shit. I want none of it. And all I want was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that if somehow, some way, and I'm not there yet, by the way, I'm a work in progress, like every other person listening to this, is like, we can somehow just strip down all the noise and all the interference. If we can somehow put all the demons at bay, if we can somehow return to our simplest purpose of loving one another, like it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
And I just keep kind of trying to return back to that gravity point. I deleted Instagram. I'm not on social media anymore.
Yeah.
All the things that used to matter to me, I have completely stripped the interference out of my life because I only want to focus on one of three things.
Yeah.
Am I showing up for my family? Am I showing up for my company? Am I showing up for myself?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
If it's a no, then it's a waste of my time.
Yeah. It sounds so simple. How have you said you work with therapists and executive coach. How have you, because you strike me as someone that, like, if there's a quote unquote, in my words, not yours, like problem or challenge, you're like, I'm going to throw every fucking resource possible, all of my energy, all of my mind space. I will, you know, like obliterate this problem because that's how I roll. I suspect that with self-love, it's like, it's like yoga. You can't like try harder. If you try harder in yoga, you fall.
Yeah.
Are you open to sharing some of the things that you've tried and specifically the ones that you think have inched you closer?
Well, first and foremost, shout out to Shopify because when I first joined Shopify, I feel like they saw a lot of raw talent. And I say that very humbly. Like, I just think that they saw that I had like a lot of potential. And I went from running a small company to being at what I felt back then, a big company was 1,200 people. By the time I left, it was 10,000. But I was having these like emotional outbursts. And they were like, yo, we want to get you an executive coach. Like, we want to help you like navigate the stress and the pressure that you're under as a executive leader in a publicly traded company and being a young guy. And I worked with that. I had one, and then I worked with her for a year. And then I had one who I worked for 4 years. And when I left Shopify, she actually continued to work with me. Coach Susie, I hope that in some way she's listening to this, but she fucking changed my life. And when I would talk to her about my meltdowns or like being disappointed with how like product, like we'd launch products that were like hugely wildly successful. And I would just go to her venting about how everything fucking went wrong. And, you know, I would close a huge deal. And like, just go to her and vent about like just the stupidest shit. And then when I started Maple, you know, I turned to her and just said, you know, like, I don't like how I'm showing. I actually emailed her and asked, you know, if you'd be willing to see me, because at that point Shopify had its own internal executive coaching staff.
Yeah.
I said, I don't like how I'm showing up for my kids. And this demon is bigger than I am. And I just would love to continue to get some help on like how to combat what's going on here. And she's the one that really kind of sat me down and said, you know, this might be like kind of hard for you, but you're just like overly critical on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just don't love yourself. Like, she's like, look at all that you've done. And you just like, you constantly are fucking blowing up on shit. And it was the first time that like someone actually told me like, I don't love myself. And in a weird way, it was kind of like I started wearing prescription glasses when I was 25. And in a weird way, when she said that, I hung up and I was like, shit, she's fucking right. Like, this has been an ongoing thing. Like, this is a thematic thing that like everything is always needing to be better. Never good, always needing to be better. And what I've done now, to be honest with you, is I have worked incredibly hard on myself for a long time. And my wife will tell you that I'm probably the most critical person she's ever met on myself and the hardest working person I've ever met on myself. But the biggest unlock I've ever had in my entire life was having the humility to know that at the end, I won't even matter. When I'm gone, the sun comes up the next day, the waves will hit the beach, life will continue on, people that I did business with will continue to live on, the earth will continue to go on. Like, I am not larger than life. The shit that I'm doing is not larger than life. The products that I'm building, they are fucking not larger than life. Yeah. I am fucking nothing in this world, but I am important in my household.
Yeah.
And I just had a come to Jesus moment with like, you know, if we asked your daughter right now, how old's your daughter?
My daughter is 10.
Go ask your 10-year-old daughter who invented the iPhone. I would bet you a shit ton she's not going to say Steve Jobs.
She would actually know, but I see where you're going with this.
The majority of 10-year-olds. Or ask her if she has an iPhone, what is the number one app she uses and who invented that?
Yeah, she wouldn't know.
Right? And so, like, I think when I had the humility to realize that, like, I don't matter.
Yep.
And I said that in the most beautiful way. I matter to a handful of people. Like, the smallest amount. I think I actually matter to 7 people, maybe.
Yeah.
Not 800, not 8,000, not 8 million, 8 people.
Yeah.
And when I'm gone, those 8 people are going to be fucked up.
Yeah. Wow.
And so the development and the pumping my brakes and the, like, re-pulling myself together from the abyss of bullshit and hatred and whatever. And, you know, by the way, as you know, with people who challenge with being overly critical, some of it's work, some of it's physical. So, like, it's not one thing. It touches lots of things. But the typical things that require, like, created bad behavior. I'm going to say that kind of the things that triggered the worst versions of myself were always when it came to building things.
Yeah.
And products. And having the humility to know that this doesn't matter has helped me a tremendous amount.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to the kids thing, because one thing that I've been struggling with, and I think we have different opinions on this, is where one draws the line financially on helping kids. And so, like, I have always kind of, my wife and I, our kids are young. They're older than yours, but young. But I've always said that, you know, there are, for example, like, we want to pay for our kids' college,
yep,
and education. But yep, there are certain, like, if our daughter, and we spoke about this before, if our daughter wants to be a teacher, like, we would consider supporting, like, giving her extra money to live the life, we would consider giving her extra money, basically.
Yeah.
And so, like, basically, we would support our children financially beyond education in different situations. And one one that we think about often, so early, would be like buying their first home, right? Nepo home buyers.
Yep.
And I know earlier you said you've kind of like draw this like very firm line. It's like, my kids are going to, like, I'm going to believe in them and love them.
Yep.
Talk me through how you think about, I mean, you have, you know, you're going to have money left over. You're going to have a lot. Yep. You're always going to have more money than you can spend on yourself and others. Yep. How do you think about the role that money will play, your money, your family's money will play in their lives over time?
Well, let me be like 100% clear that my kids are already having a significant competitive advantage in life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. First thing that they have going for them is that they're both men, which men have an easier time on earth than women. Both of my kids are fair skinned. My wife is very fair skinned. My kids are very white, blonde haired, blue eyed kids. So, like, just by nature of their DNA, they have an unfair advantage over the rest of society.
Cool.
Then my kids are growing up in what is widely regarded as the top 5 most expensive zip code in America.
Yeah.
And my kids are growing up in a loving household. So I've already given my kids everything that they need to be successful in life.
Yeah.
My wife and I are going to be good parents to them. They get the benefit of probably systematic and gender racism, and they get the benefit of growing up in a safe and supportive environment.
Yep.
Most people don't get all 3 of those things. They don't. Yeah. Most people don't even get any of those things.
It's like Powerball. It's like it's childhood Powerball.
Right? So, like, yeah. I think to some extent my relationship with money and them is different, because I think that, like, it would be incredibly disservice to both them and to society to widen that moat. So my sons are going to get to go to the best school available. I am committed to their development for life, but I'm committed to giving them the best chance of them becoming who they want to be, K through 12th grade.
Okay.
Right. So school, whatever schools that they can get into for K through 12th grade. My son's going to one of the best schools in the Central Coast for kindergarten. Like, you know, they're going to have a huge advantage in life.
Good.
they have to carve their own way out.
Yep.
And if I just continue to make life easy for them, I'm not giving them a chance to figure out who they are. No. Life is already going to make life easy for them. Yeah. And so, I have zero intentions or plans on buying their first house. I have zero intentions and plans of financially helping them. Obviously, when I die, they're going to be financially comfortable forever, but hopefully by then they have figured out who they are.
Yeah. They'll probably be in their, you know, assuming actuarial tables, they'll be in their mid-50s.
I would pray. I pray for it. I mean, I pray that they're in their 60s. I was 35 when I had my kids, right? So like, I'm planning on being an old man. And they need to go find out who they are. And I want to get to witness who they are. The number one thing my kids are always going to have from me is I'm going to believe in their ability to become. My kids want to be a teacher. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But there are no teachers at the Montecito Club. Just to be super clear, the Montecito Club is capitalists, people who run PE funds. Like, it's not teachers.
Yeah.
Right. So like, I believe deeply that setting them up for failure is giving them a life they can't afford so that they can go work some job they want. They should go be a teacher out of passion, out of love, because that's their calling. And they have to live with the consequences of those decisions, side hustle, invest, do what the fuck they got to do. They want to go be a fireman? Mazel tov. They want to go be an artist that lives in Paris and live on a street corner? Daddy loves you. Can't wait to visit. Going to support. Because you know what?
Yeah.
They have to live with the outcome of those decisions.
Yeah.
I don't want them to live a life I forced on them.
Yeah. Do you think it's so binary though? Like, you know, I can see both sides where, you know, if like, I'll give you an example. My wife is an artist.
Yep.
And she lived, she grinded that New York lifestyle to become an artist. There were so many decisions where she would like be on the subway at 4 a.m. because she couldn't afford to live anywhere close to, you know, where anything was. 4 a.m., you know, out drinking with friends, taking the subway home by herself, pitch black New York City. And like, to me, in that case, if my daughter is like, Dad, I want to be an artist. I'm committed. And because of it, I got to like live in some like scary neighborhood to make that a possibility. I think that there's a paternal instinct in me that would be like, I want to take that. Maybe think of like Maslow's hierarchy, like base, like safety. Like I want to take that safety need off the table while still giving you the ability to be an artist. Right. Yeah.
So first of all, let me be super clear. My wife's cousin's daughter, so her second cousin, who's 17, is moving to Santa Barbara for school.
Okay.
And she's like a daughter to us. Mm-hmm. I said, listen, I don't want you driving at nighttime. I don't want you doing this. And like, I'm going to get you, and she doesn't have any money. I'm going to get you an Uber family account. You know, I want you to be safe. I think that there is exceptions to the rule, specifically with women in today's society, in today's world, that if I had a girl and she was living in Queens, New York, I might be like giving you a different answer, but I have likely 2 6-foot-2 bucking Broncos of boys. And like, I don't know, I've been in enough bar fights. It ain't that bad. Yeah. Like, you know, they can figure their shit out. So I think that there's always going to be some extent, like variations in my answer. If my kids were like grinding their ass off and I was worried about their general safety and concern.
Yeah.
I might have a different answer for you. I might say, hey, listen, like where you're living, putting your life at risk is not worth it. Like, I'm going to subsidize a little, but you have to keep crying. Maybe that's where it comes at. But the idea of like, hey, you want to be an artist, you want to live in a $3 million condo in Paris, that's never happening.
Yeah, that's right? True. And I think that's the case in my household too. Yeah.
That's a little bit different. My kids are like, you know, they're going, if my son was like, Dad, I want to be a heart surgeon and I'm in medical school and like, I can't, like my commute's an hour and this and that, like any parent's going to try to step up and like help better their children's opportunity. What I don't want is my children to bake in a dependency and a false expectation that life is going to be handed to them on a silver platter and daddy's going to give them like, you know, I hope my kids working at a country club when he's 15 are working at a hotel or fucking washing cars. Like, that's not my job to give him money when he's 15, 16, 17, 18. He's able-bodied.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that like what this all kind of comes down to in the end, which I think we both universally agree with, is that parents have to have the right level of intuition, discipline, and framework, the same way you have to when you're building a company, to make incredibly difficult decisions on a case-by-case scenario for the betterment of the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
My family's a business.
Yeah.
I'm in the family business. And circumstantially, we will look at every opportunity that's put in front of us, but the general framework of thinking is that you get one admission ticket on this ride, and you are responsible for designing your own roller coaster.
Yeah.
I'm not putting you on my roller coaster. That's this roller coaster is mommy and daddy's roller coaster. We've built this roller coaster. You now need to go find your life partner, struggle. I'm sure your wife probably should be on this podcast. I'm sure her stories are incredible about what she had to do to achieve the success that she's had as an artist, which is a tough industry.
Yeah.
And she got to figure out who she is.
Yeah.
I just don't want to deprive my kids of experiencing life.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Dude, Michael, I could talk to you for hours. This was awesome. My heart is very full.
It was a great chat. Thank you for having me.
I really admire you. You're a deep thinker. You have we've only met twice, but I could feel the kindness in the depth of kindness in your heart. So I really appreciate you, man.
I love that. And I enjoy our time together. I hope 2 turns into 200 and that we're not that far apart. And there's a lot of ways between here and there and a lot of time left on earth, we hope. So, and keep spreading a good message.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Anywhere our folks can go learn more about you, follow you. You said you're not on social.
Don't bother with me.
Tell them your company. We didn't even talk about your current company.
I'm not worth following, but you certainly should follow my company, Maple. I think we're at Grow Maple on Instagram. And
I'll put it in the show notes. I'm
on LinkedIn, but following me is a waste of your time. Go enjoy your kids.
You're the man. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.